Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, March 2, 2017. We'll start with an article on page 1. Decatur City Council Mayor's Candidates Face Off by Chris Lusvardi, H&R staff writer. Decatur. John Mickler was interested Wednesday in seeing what the candidates for Decatur Mayor and City Council had to say about some of the issues facing the city. He was among nearly 150 people in attendance who could come away from a debate organized by the Decatur NAACP and Herald and Review that was held at the Decatur Civic Center with a better sense of where candidates stand on many of the issues. Mickler was hoping to hear more innovative ideas than the candidates just saying they will add more jobs. It was a chance to see all the candidates on equal footing, Mickler said. It will cause me to take a closer look at some of them. Making changes is about bringing groups together for collaboration, said Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe, who is running against local businessman John Phillips. Moore Wolfe and Phillips took the stage after six council candidates running for three open seats spent nearly 90 minutes discussing the issues. The mayoral candidates most widely differed on their views about the job performance of city manager Tim Gleason. He is a very smart man who sees things in the budget we didn't see, Moore Wolfe said. He doesn't make the decisions. The council makes decisions. Phillips said he has been around close enough to know about the manager's role. Phillips said the manager should be coached, which has not happened. He needs to be the one led, Phillips said. He has not been responsive to the citizens. I have not been on the inside, but I've been close enough. Moore Wolfe said the community is moving in the right direction. Phillips criticized her for voting in favor of fee increases, but she said those have been necessary for projects in the community. Enough already, Phillips said, of the attempts to raise revenue. Phillips proposed a reduction in property taxes that he said would be equaled out by a slight increase in sales tax. The math doesn't work, Moore Wolfe said. The candidates were asked about the city's ability to represent all parts of the community. Moore Wolfe said it's about the relationships that have been established. We have built trust in the community, Moore Wolfe said. It's about knowing every part of the population has opportunities. Phillips said the police department needs to look more like the community by hiring more minorities. That should happen throughout the city staff, Phillips said. We need to change our hiring practices. Juanita Morris recently relocated with her husband Jeremy and their two children from Mississippi to be closer to her family. They want their children to grow up in a smaller, close-knit community. Jeremy Morris said they went to the debate wanting to learn more about the candidates. They are very passionate about the community, he said. They are passionate about the people. They are passionate about progress. Juanita Morris said she is still making up her mind about the third council candidate while having two she feels confident in supporting. The council candidates were asked about similar topics as the mayoral contenders. Each of them expressed a strong affinity for Decatur, as they did when they met Tuesday during the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations, or CONO, meeting. Yet, they acknowledged the city has areas of concern that should be addressed. Decatur has some great strengths, local businessman Andrew Apple said. We have lots of good things in the works. It could be more. David Horn, a Millikan University biology professor, said council members should be viewed as trustees. They need to develop a strategic plan for the city, he said. Decatur has proven it can do special things, Horn said. Now is the time to build on that foundation. Incumbent Pat McDaniel said the council has over 73,000 partners it needs to consider when making decisions. I'm here to represent every segment of the community, McDaniel said. That's why I'm so active. We represent everyone, so we need to listen. We might not agree all the time, but we should work together. Current Decatur Park District Commissioner Chris Riley said the city can greatly improve by working together with other governmental entities, including the Park District and the School District. "We can always accomplish more by working together than separately," Riley said. Ordained Minister Marty Watkins said the city can be more inclusive. "We have been divided far too long," Watkins said. "It's time to bridge the gap. We need to put away our differences." Chuck Kuhl, the general manager of the Decatur Athletic Club, said nothing gets accomplished if there are turf wars among different organizations in the city. "It's everyone's job to sell the city," Kuhl said. The candidates were asked about if Decatur offers enough for young people to do. Kuhl said Decatur has a lot to do, but he would add more recreational opportunities, such as bike trails, and provide incentives for attending college. Apple sees room for more redevelopment of the lakefront and would address concerns in neighborhoods. Riley said it's a matter of educating the community about the opportunities that are available. Horn said making more jobs available to youth is important, providing connections with local colleges and universities. Watkins wants to make sure families are staying in Decatur for activities such as birthday parties. He also said jobs for youth would be among the issues that should be addressed. McDaniel said the challenge is about finding activities of interest, as more kids would be in parks if Wi-Fi were offered. The debate sparked interest among some of those in attendance returning for a similar event at 6 p.m. Thursday for the candidates running for the Decatur School Board. Candidates will be able to make opening and closing statements, along with being provided a chance to discuss the issues. Questions will come from the two organizations, along with Herald and Review readers and audience members. If you go, the Decatur School Board candidate debate is at 6 p.m. today in the Decatur Civic Center Theater, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Admission is free. Unfunded pension debt costs school districts federal money, by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Most federal funds provided to public schools are meant to support low-income and underserved students. Yet, when a school district uses federal funds to hire teachers, to reduce class sizes, or add extra support in reading, for example, the state of Illinois takes up to 45% of those federal funds to pay off pension debt. When a school district hires a teacher using locally raised funds such as property tax, it pays only 0.58% toward pensions. For a teacher making $40,000, the district would pay $232 to the teacher's retirement system. If that teacher is paid with federal funds, the district's contribution to the teacher's retirement system balloons to $15,416. Illinois is the only state that does this, and the current rate of 38.5% is due to increase to 44.61% in 2018. Schools will choose to spend their federal funds on stuff rather than hiring teachers, because that way they get to keep the money, said Jessica Handy, Government Affairs Director for STAND for Children Leadership Center. Senate Bill 0195 amends the downstate teacher article of the Illinois Pension Code so that the school districts will pay the same percentage to the pension fund whether the teacher's salary comes from state or federal funds, beginning July 1st. State Senator Andy Menar calls the bill of incredible importance. "Within the system, where we have the most regressive system in the country, we have the TRS system, which is equally regressive in terms of its devotion of resources and who those resources are intended to support, more or less, depending on where a district is in the state and local circumstances," Menar said. "Wealthier districts with high property wealth, few low-income students, and a low property tax rate raise much of their revenue locally, and don't depend as much on federal dollars. In a high-poverty district, where property taxes are high and property value is low, and local revenue is limited, the schools depend much more on state and federal funds. Losing a chunk of those funds to pay pension debt hurts more. If the bill passes, said Ted Kovold, chief operational officer for Decatur Schools, it would help the district immensely. We'd be thrilled, Kovold said. It would have huge benefits for us. There was a bill last year that included some provisions deemed unconstitutional, and it never came up for a vote. This version could potentially come up for a vote during this session, but did not come up for a vote Tuesday. The Senate bill will be called in committee on March 8th, Handy said. I've been continuously refreshing the General Assembly page all day, watching to see when the Senate Bill 1 amendment gets filed for the big school funding bill that's part of the grand bargain. But so far, no luck. As of yesterday, Senator Menard thought the TRS fix would be included there, too, among lots of other changes. Meanwhile, district personnel who handle federal grants and title funds are left trying to figure out how best to use the money. The impact on school districts is that all the title fund directors have been looking for ways and asking themselves, how do I do this? What do I pay instead? If it's going to cost me that much to pay for a teacher, and I have to send 38% to TRS, then are we better served paying for teaching assistants or buying textbooks, said Rhonda Thornton, grants administrator for the Decatur School District. Handy said that funds meant to support academic achievement of low-income students should directly benefit them, and more teachers are often the best use of that money. Yet, if the district is losing almost half of every dollar, it's no wonder federal funds won't be spent on hiring teachers. Illinois spends the most on students of any state, about $13,077 per student. Yet almost half of that funds pension debt instead of making a direct impact on students. All certified teachers in Illinois, except those in Chicago Public Schools, participate in the TRS pension plan, which is funded by three sources: employee contributions, school district contributions, and state appropriation. There are two buckets of pension costs. One is normal cost, and the other is unfunded liability. Normal costs are the amount it would take today, as interest accrues, to fully fund pensions for members when they retire. In 2014, that was 17.29% of payroll, with teachers paying 9.4%, school districts paying 0.58%, and the state paying the rest. Unfunded liability is the problem, due to five state retirement systems having been underfunded for years, the most of any state. State statute requires TRS and the other state systems to certify every year how much extra the state must contribute to bring the system to a 90% funding ratio by 2045 in order to cover a shortfall. Illinois teachers do not participate in Social Security. Nationwide, about 40% of teachers are not covered by Social Security in 15 states. Poverty points. The Decatur School District's high poverty rate of 73% qualifies the district for significant poverty grant funds from the federal government. But using those funds to hire teachers raises the district's pension liability rate. In fiscal year 2016, Decatur paid $359,760 to teachers' retirement system. Nearby districts with lower poverty rates were less hard hit. Argenta-Orianna, with 46% low-income students, paid $25,397. Moroa-Forsyth, with 19% low-income, paid $54,856. Meridian, with 35% low-income, paid $26,450. Mount Zion, with 18% low income, paid $61,109. And Warrensburg-Latham, with 73% low income, paid $22,871. The amount paid is based on the higher percentage of teachers' salaries paid to teachers' retirement system imposed on federally funded teachers' salaries. House Bill 656 and Senate Bill 195 would reduce that amount to the actual costs of teachers' pensions rather than past unfunded liabilities. Crime and courts. Decatur man arrested in weekend attempted murders by Tony Reed and Ryan Boyles, H&R staff writers. Decatur. Police have arrested a 25-year-old Decatur man in connection with the attempted murder of two people over the weekend. Thomas U. Elzey faces a preliminary charge of attempted murder, and his bond has been set at $500,000. The victims, a 20-year-old man and his 24-year-old sister, were hit by multiple gunshots as they backed out of a driveway in the 1,000 block of Westview Street at 11:19 p.m. Saturday. Elzey was arrested early Wednesday morning in the 3700 block of North Woodford Street. Sworn police statements said the siblings were shot in their arm and torsos, and both sets of wounds were considered life-threatening. Their bullet-riddled van had been driven to Decatur Memorial Hospital, where they were interviewed by police as they were ready for surgery. Officers during interviews learned that a tense history existed between members of the victim's family and their associates and persons associated with the Elzey family, the statement said. This history included altercations and recent shooting incidents. Officials said the two victims' conditions have stabilized. The police statements said Elzey and a 23-year-old Decatur man were waiting as the brother and sister's van backed out of a driveway. The victims told police they then heard gunshots and saw muzzle flashes as their bodies were hit by bullets coming from where Elzey and the other suspect were standing. The victims later allegedly identified the suspects from a photo lineup. An arrest warrant has been issued for another suspect in connection with the shooting, said Decatur Police Sergeant Steve Carroll. The other suspect's name will not be released at this time, Carroll said. Police had previously said they believed that a number of other shootings early Sunday were also connected to the incident. Gunshots were reported at 1 a.m. in the 500 block of West Division Street, 2:10 a.m. in the 3700 block of North Portage Place, 4:19 a.m. in the 1700 block of West Center Street, and 4:41 a.m. in the 100 block of West Leafland Avenue. Carroll said police are still investigating whether those shootings are connected to the attempted murder incident. Government and politics. Cuts possible as Decatur Township preps for budget talks, by Ryan Boyles, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Budget discussions for the Decatur Township are set to begin later this month. The Township's Board of Trustees has scheduled a special meeting to be held 6 p.m. March 16th, where the Board is expected to approve a tentative budget for the coming fiscal year. That decision was made by the Board during its meeting Wednesday night, where it had originally been scheduled to begin discussions of the budget. A document was passed around by Supervisor Lisa Stanley to the other trustees, laying out the financial state of the township, which projects to have a $1.04 million cash balance at the beginning of the next fiscal year that begins April 1st. That is more than the $550,000 cash budget balance reported in the town fund at the beginning of the current fiscal year. The new budget also has in place new salaries for elected officials, which became controversial last fall when some elected officials saw five-figure cuts to their pay. board members were mum on what budget discussions could all entail, though trustee Tom Grenius said he would be looking to make cuts across the board. "I'd like to see a lot of cuts being made in some of these accounts," he said. A large portion of the more than two-hour meeting Wednesday night was focused on a plan that would provide the board more control over purchases made by its employees. After more than half an hour of discussion, the board eventually tabled the proposal, which would require the board to authorize any purchases up to a certain dollar amount. Attorney Jeff Jurgens said after the meeting that a new proposal will be presented to the board at its next meeting with a set dollar amount, as well as to clarify language in which purchases during emergency situations would not need approval. Stanley said after the meeting that the idea was something Grenius had pushed to implement, and that it should give the board more oversight on purchases being made. When asked, Grenius said he felt it necessary after looking at purchases made by township departments. "The point is to make wise uses of taxpayers' dollars," he said. Recreation. Nelson Park's ropes course will open April 1st, by Justin Kahn. Decatur. A high ropes course will be available for use at Nelson Park next to Overlook Adventure Mini Golf by April 1st. Decatur Park District Director of Operations Ryan Raleigh announced the plan at Wednesday's Park Board meeting. He said construction will begin March 13th. "There's nothing like this in the area," Raleigh said. "I saw something like it when we took our kids to Wisconsin Dells, and there's also one in Iowa and at Indiana Beach. But it'll be new in this area." The ropes course is a 35-foot, 9-inch-tall structure with three levels that children and adults can use. Climbers are harnessed in and are locked into one track that can go in multiple directions. Jamie Gower, Park District Director of Recreation and Facilities, said staff was close to finalizing a fee structure that would be brought to the board at the March 15th meeting. Raleigh said bids for the batting cages that will be next to the ropes course will also be ready for the next board meeting. The ropes course, the batting cages, and deluxe playground, as well as a new pavilion in Nelson Park by the dog park, will be paid for out of the 2015 Open Space Lands Acquisition and Development Grant that was delayed because of the state budget impasse. The grant is matching, with the state supplying $400,000 and the park district matching the $400,000 plus $197,830 from its capital fund. Macon Waves Pedal Boat Rental, Tandemonium Bicycle Rental, and Stand-Up Paddle Boards and Kayaks will all be back starting this spring in partnerships with the Park District. Raleigh said the Park District is working with Chastain Professional Services on finalizing the Scoville Zoo train extension that would bring its route to the Children's Museum of Illinois. The train extension is scheduled to be finished by fall 2018. Millikan baseball players read across America at Parsons, by Teresa Churchill, H&R senior writer, Decatur. The sight of Millikan University students Philip Ganley and John Walters walking down the hallway in their baseball caps and shirts was enough to make Cheyenne Sunderland's jaw drop. Yet the second grader was far from the only student at Parsons School who was a little awestruck Wednesday morning as two dozen members of the team took a break from class to come read to them as one of Decatur's early observances of National Read Across America Day today. Read Across America is a nationwide reading celebration that takes place annually on March 2nd, Dr. Seuss's birthday. Fourth grade teacher Tammy Browning said, "This is the best my students have ever listened to the reading of a book." Head coach Brian Townsend said this is the second year his players have read to school children, having gone to Stevenson School last year. It's a great chance to get off campus and think about something else, Townsend said. Most of our guys have fun with it. Parsons was the team's pick this year because speech pathologist Ashley Blunt is engaged to marry assistant baseball coach Eric Ignowski on July 8th. Ganley, a senior from Decatur, and Walters, a sophomore from Normal, read two books by Dr. Seuss, Wacky Wednesday and In a People House, in the first grade classroom of Ganley's aunt, Rhoda Ganley. Like her teacher, Natalie Dashiell was dressed wacky for the day, wearing a pair of sweatpants for a hat and socks on her ears. Andre Peck, who asked questions such as how many runs it takes to win a game, guessed that the M on the player's cap stood for Americans. In Browning's room, freshman Craig Austin of Oriana was asked about injuries and had to admit he is currently on the injured list after undergoing surgery. I sprained my ankle running to first base, he said. It was a grade 3 sprain. Afterwards, Walters and Austin said they enjoyed the experience and would do it again. The kids really seem to look up to us, Austin said. Decatur, inmate robbery report. A Decatur woman locked up in the Macon County Jail said more than $500 worth of her belongings have been stolen from her home while she has been incarcerated. Written reports said that the 25-year-old woman, who has been jailed for more than 90 days, was told that personal items, including clothes, coats, shoes, and purses, have been stolen by her boyfriend, possibly with the help of another woman. The jailed woman told police she can't find out what's going on because the boyfriend refuses to talk to her while she is in jail. LIHEAP appointments. Appointments for the Low Income Home Energy Assistant Program will be made starting at 7 a.m. Friday, March 3rd, in the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary Anderson Plaza. Applicants are asked to park in the lot across the street from the Civic Center. Appointments will also be made by telephone Friday, starting at 8:30 a.m. by calling 217-428-2193. No calls will be taken at the Civic Center. The program is administered by Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation. Appointments will be issued on a first-come, first-served basis until all slots are filled. Agronomy Day. An Agronomy Day meeting will be held from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Thursday, March 9th, at the Macon Community Center along U.S. 51 at Woodcock Road. Topics with regional and national speakers will include the use of dicamba to manage weed pressure, as well as improve crop yields for increased revenue. Agricultural opportunity organizations and companies are sponsoring the meeting along with lunch and will provide exhibits and staff to answer questions. Pre-registration is required to obtain a lunch ticket and handout material. Register at www.illinoisfarmradio.com. Online crime reporting. The Decatur Police Department has started offering an online reporting system for non-emergency offenses, in which there is no identifiable suspect and no physical evidence to collect. The site is www.dpdconnect.com or through the City of Decatur webpage, www.decaturil.gov, and selecting Departments Police, where a link to file a report can be found. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. Please stay tuned.